We do things so wrong with transformers. We hook them up in longitudinal magnetodielectric mode, in dielectric mode, in contradistinction to what the magnetism of the mutual inductance of transformers are predicated on. Their goal is to share magnetism, not dielectricity. And so why do we hook it them up the wrong way? We got the primary disconnected from the secondary, and so we literally force the core to transfer the dielectric force when it's not set up for that. It's no wonder we have problems with dealing with transformers in which voltage overload occurs and we have to put capacitors across their coils. Well, because we hooked it up all wrong to begin with. The way Nathan Stubblefield did it and the way Mr. Prepa does it is exactly right. We set it up in which we short out the coils of a transformer because we're using them in parallel with each other so that the flow of current can be conducted. Transformers are meant to conduct electricity, not put a stop to it like a capacitor does, you know, the flow. Not to put a stop to the flow, but to allow it, to encourage it to flow, you know, because we're winding up the coils. So we want it to flow, but by shorting out the transformer, by turning it around 90 degrees and connecting it a little differently than we normally do. So what happens is negative current is a servant to mutual inductance. Okay? So mutual inductance takes precedence over whether or not current is going to invert itself or not. Because current, what is it? It's a fiction, right? It's reactive voltage divided by impedance. And so it being a mathematical fiction, it's subservient to mutual inductance, which is the dominant role model. Okay, so when mutual inductance decides, hey, one coil over here has a larger inductance and the other one over here has a smaller one, and we've connected our transformer properly by shorting it out and using it in transverse electromagnetic modality and not the usual conventional modality of longitudinal magnetodielectric, because that's the wrong way to do it, because we're trying to make the inductances in series, in line with the path of energy. We're not in shunt, not in parallel, but in series. Okay, so in line. So we hook it up correctly, and now the big coil looks at to the small one, and the small one looks to the big one and say, hey, you got to share. Why? Well, with the same thing happens when we deplete a battery. We connect the two ends of the battery, hopefully through a circuit, you know, something of resistance. And the larger potential at one terminal of the battery starts to diminish because now it's sharing its potential with the other terminal of the battery that has lesser potential and using the circuit as its pathway to equalize the voltage differences. Well, here now we're using magnetic coupling of two self-inductances, two inductors, two inductances. We're using the mutual coupling between them as a means of determining, oh, you know what? We got to equalize their masses, and you never can do that, right? Unlike a battery, you can't deplete the inductance of a large coil and rip it out and stuff it into the smaller coil. It's not going to happen because it's physical mass of copper or iron or whatever aluminum winding that you've got there, it ain't going to move. So it moves the electricity instead, and it keeps doing it on and on and on perpetually. So long as the electricity is there in the coils, it's going to get moved from the big coil to the smaller coil. And in order to do that, the big coil has to become a generator. And what's the definition of a generator? It's negative current. And so we literally create as a side effect, in order to get the job done, we create inversion of current relative to voltage by 180 degrees displacement because we need the current to leave the big inductor in order to go to the small one, and so the big one becomes a generator. And in my experimentation of simulating Mr. Preva's current gain video on YouTube, in Russian. I found that the big coil is a generator all the time. All the time, it becomes a generator. Sorry about that. It becomes a generator all the time. Not just the capacitor that I put alongside it in parallel that's a generator half the time during one half cycle and a consumer during the other half cycle. No, this big coil becomes a generator all the time, and the small coil becomes a consumer all the time. It's amazing. It's uncanny. And this is literally what Nathan Stubblefield managed to do. He managed to do this. So when you have a larger inductance mutually coupled to a smaller one, they want to share. They want to equalize their inductances by equalizing their energy because they cannot not do any differently. I mean, this is uncanny. The fact that the small coil wants to take from the larger coil its inductance has nothing to do with conservation of energy. I mean, it's a minor detail. Oh yeah, guess what? The coils just happen to have some energy on them, and that gets shared instead of the inductance. If there was no energy, it's still there. The dead small coil is trying to take from the large dead coil its inductance. But because there's no energy there, nothing gets transferred, and the inductance is physical, not immaterial, so it stays where it is in the larger coil. But if there happens to be energy in the larger coil, and I suppose there has to be energy in the smaller one as well, I don't know, then and only then does the energy get transferred. Now, it almost doesn't matter how much energy is there, because if there's a good deal of energy, it'll get transferred. But if there's no energy, nothing gets transferred. But if it's a paucity, a scarcity of information or energy, if you prefer, then magic could happen in that energy seems to come out of nowhere. Maybe. Or maybe it's just being recycled. I think that's what happens with electrical reactants or so-called free energy. It simply gets recycled to a very high degree of efficiency, so much so that it looks like more energy is coming out than energy is going in. And reality, all you're doing is recycling the reactants to such a large degree. You keep using it over and over again that you're getting like 100 times of energy out versus one unit of energy going in, because you're recycling the other 99 units per unit of time. I have to agree with Nathan Stubblefield now because of witnessing what Mr. Prever has accomplished. He has literally revived the premise of Nathan Stubblefield's so-called Earth Battery, and he never wanted to call it an Earth Battery. The Patent Office wanted to call it that because at that time in history, they were familiar with Earth Batteries, which is a different animal, but they thought it was the same, and so they insisted that he name the patent the way they decided it should be named. Yet, that was not his choice. His choice of name was a generator, that it should an electric generator, because that's what it did. It generated electricity. I mean, it wasn't being fed any to speak of. I mean, he liked to plant them under the roots of an old oak tree, and so the tree became a grounded aerial, receiving various frequencies from the environment at probably no more than a microvolt of charge, and that was enough to get things going. A paucity of charge was enough to get things going so that it wanted to steal energy from somewhere. That's what reactants wants to do. It wants to move it around. It wants to share it. It wants to steal it. It wants to be dynamic about it. And if there's energy nearby, it'll get it. That's the uncanny thing of this style of reactants, is that it literally steals energy from wherever it can get it. But if it can't get it, it gets it out of its own reactability, its own inductive reactants and capacitive reactants. It literally comes out of those two potential sources of energy, because that's what they are. They're potential sources of energy, and because they're potential, they can't be spent. It's unfortunate that when I use these words, all it does is create confusion in anybody who is formally trained, because anybody who's formally trained is trained that, oh, a capacitor stores potential and a coil stores magnetic field. When in reality, as I've already explained in this series of recordings, it's already stored there before we even charge it. The capacitance already is a stored charge. It's just not kinetic. It's potential. It's already potential. Even before we put the potential of voltage on there, the capacitance alone is potential. But I have to say that even though I am speculating, because that's the way it is with coils. Mr. Preva has already demonstrated that in a way that is much easier to comprehend than simply reading the patent or anecdotes and stories about Nathan Stubblefield. It just never did it for me. But seeing what Mr. Preva has done right in front of my face and then simulating it in Paul Falstead's simulator, I could tell. It took a few days, though, not right away, but gradually, finally this morning, I came to the conclusion of what is going on and where in history there is precedence for what Mr. Preva has managed to redo. You know, anything good is eternal. It never dies. It's always there, regardless of whether or not humans forget about it. And you know what? Humans do. We have very short attention spans, let alone our memory is even shorter. Well, or the other way around, but whatever. And it might be our short lives have something to do with it, you know? It's kind of a little parallelism there, you know? A short life, short memory, short attention span. Likewise, all among the all three. Unholy trilogy there. Anyway, so this is literally what... Now, someone on YouTube, one of the commenters, it is not my idea. This is why I can say this about Nathan Stubblefield and bring him into the picture because, see, we're all coming together, contributing. Someone contributed a comment on Mr. Preva's YouTube video underneath it, and he mentioned putting a third coil on top of the two coils. Now I have to imagine or repeat out loud what I had been thinking but didn't really know what it was good for. And I thought, yeah, maybe, kind of like Nathan Stubblefield's coil. Yeah, maybe. Now, not maybe, now for sure. He had a third coil wrapped around his two coils. His two coils were connected to each other, I think in parallel. One was iron, one was copper, and they were wound together. And around a huge bolt, an iron bolt. Literally, it was a bolt. It had a head on it and threads. I might have had a nut on the bottom to hold the two wooden discs that became his bobbin. So that setup was his bobbin that he could wind on. But there was a third coil wrapped around all of this that was not connected to any of this. It was simply sitting there in the magnetic field of the inner two bifilar wound coils. Now, the copper winding was insulated with a copper sleeve. And he didn't say whether or not he treated the copper sleeve with any kind of, you know, waxy substance to seal it any further. But the iron was bare. And this is completely in line with Oliver Heaviside's solution to the transatlantic telegraph cable problem of the 1800s. So it has precedence. It all is set in the right frame of history because they're both in the 1800s. Anyway, this third coil this commenter was referring to, Nathan Stubblefield suggested it in the patent. And so if we have a third coil that's magnetically coupled to the two coils that are shorted, the singular transformer that is shorted to itself, if there's a third coil added surrounding this, but not electrically connected to either one, but just magnetically coupled, a tight coupling, probably an iron winding, just like I think Nathan Stubblefield specified it to be iron for this third coil. In any case, you know, the only thing about iron is that, what, it oxidizes, right? It has a resistance six times greater than copper. But its remnants is superb. Yeah, that's something copper can't even come close to. Its magnetic remnants is uncanny, or else Edward Leetskalnin's perpetual motion holder and the computer core memory dating between 1955 and 1975 would have no meaning, would have no merit, no impact on our lives. So this is really old school stuff that we've gotten away from. And the core that Nathan Stubblefield used was a solid iron core. It was not laminated. It was not, an epoxy compression matrix. Like a lot of these very friable cores of AC transformers you can get on Amazon nowadays. My God, you just hit it with your hand. You don't even need a hammer. And the whole thing fragments into pieces and dust. And if you try to do a PMH, a perpetual motion holder experiment, it cannot retain the magnetic field once you take the energy away. There's no memory. It doesn't remember that you gave it an orientation, a polarized orientation of magnetic field by having coils wrapped around it, such as Ed Leet-Skolnin's perpetual motion holder experiment. So this is all old school stuff, the way things were done 100 years ago or 150 years ago within that time frame, thereabouts. This is all old school stuff, and you have to go to history to understand what is going on in today's world. You know, we're trying to revive what got lost and forgotten. Nathan Stubblefield did uncanny things. The anecdotes surrounding him before his death really is like way out of the box from normal, conventional style of thinking. And yet he died a happy man, starving himself because he was so blissed out and happy. Locked in his cabin from the inside, they had to break the door down. And this heater was running, heating up his place, this electric heater. Two polished plates of metal facing each other, and the light at night surrounding his cabin came from nowhere. It was just there in the air, coming out of the air itself. It was like ambient lighting, as if somebody had, it was like, as if it's reflected lighting, you know, not direct lighting. So it didn't blind you, yet it lit up the space above the ground surrounding his cabin on the property that the farmer there was allowing him to live on his property, because he was a poor itinerant person at that point. His family left him, his investors left him, because his system only worked in the countries. It didn't work in the city. You know, it was a ground-based system, and there's so much pollution, electrosmog in the earth in the city, that his system just of telephonic transmission through the earth just didn't work. But he developed all these other systems alone and starving or whatever, impoverished at least. And so all we have are these stories, you know, that he has some kind of a pithball situation that could tell him where people were walking on his property. And probably they were creating an inductive field that was modifying the inductive field of his generator that was under the earth. And they were crossing through that field. And that's probably what he was able to determine, what part of the field, you know, and because he knew where they were. He could go there and hide behind a tree and go, boo, you know, what are you doing here in the middle of the night, and scare them. This was before he lit up the air, you know, because at first he had these lanterns. He had these carbon arc lanterns with a single wire running down to the ground or plugged into the tree. I can't remember that they were hanging from. I can't remember exactly what it was. He probably had the generator right underneath the roots of that tree, if he was plugging into the tree with a single wire. And I would imagine the carbon rods did not deteriorate because this was a single wire technology. There was no current to eat up the carbon rods. So this is really, truly a different way of doing things. Just altogether, it's different. Yet Mr. Preva is showing us, he's opening a door to the past and saying, hey, look at this. And we're wondering, whoo! And finally, it took me a couple days, not too long, 2-3 days, I finally figured it out. It's Nathan Stubblefield reincarnated. That's basically what it is, rediscovered. Just waiting to be developed further, just as Nathan Stubblefield had done, and maybe further than what Nathan Stubblefield had done, but it's just waiting for us, for someone, to be lucky and fortunate enough to figure it out further than what Mr. Preva has already started the ball rolling on. Thank you, Mr. Preva.